Seth Payne officially has more open texts right now with my kids than I do. You got a group text going with my two sons on what cartoons people in their 20s watch these days.
Yeah, I want to be sure. Like, I realize I watch a lot of Family Guy to try to just keep the funny bone tickled a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, that's Family Guy's kind of an old guy cartoon by now. I don't want to get dated. So Rick and Morty, they said. I should start watching Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty, and you're getting Judy all primed up to get you a regimen so you can beat Clint Sterner's ass running a mile, right?
Yeah, initially to beat Clint, but then eventually to run a six-minute mile.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Well, also being bone on bone with arthritis in both
of my knees. Amazing story, yes.
I have, yeah.
All right, well, joining us right now on the hotline, someone who knows full well I can't run even close to a six-minute mile. We've been friends for decades now. He, of course, is the host of Big Noon Saturday on Fox. Big one this weekend. Number one, Texas invading Columbus to take on number three, Ohio State. And hosting the studio show for that game on site will be our good friend, Rob Stone. Stoner, what's happening, man? How's Columbus treating you?
Everything is good, but I'm curious, why isn't it Pendergast and Payne? Why is it Payne and Pendergast? Something seems off right off the bat.
Listen, Rob Stone, I'm old-time egomaniac, okay? And that's what I demanded, damn it.
Yes.
I told the suits, right. That's what I call them.
Right.
Like I walked in and I said, the suits, like, listen, this is the face that's on the poster, this one right here.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been saying that I look like Gary Busey, but no, it makes no difference. That's what people want to see.
Yes.
Then Houston doesn't want Sean's face on a billboard.
No, God, no. Oh, Stoner, if you could see the text I get about my hideous face. Yeah, no,
it's a good question, Rob, and it never actually was a conversation. It was one of those things. Neither Sean nor I were going to be the guy that were like, say, we need to have our name first. So when the program director said it would be Payne and Pendergast, I think it was easy for me.
I said, you know what's good? Yeah, a paycheck is good every 2 weeks. So
yeah,
that sounds great.
That's what I said. That was my argument. I'm like, oh, do I still get paid the same amount? Yes, let's go. Let's do it.
Carry on.
Yes, carry on. How's the atmosphere up there, Stoner? Is this one of those games where already on Thursday morning the city's kind of taking on the shape of this big matchup here?
Not quite yet, but you know what? I think, guys, it's been going on for months. You know, it's really been kind of going on since that national semifinal game where Ohio State took care of Texas. People have been building to it, but it's quiet right now, but you can tell that storm is kind of brewing. You know, the burnt orange invasion hasn't happened yet. I expect that later today and definitely tomorrow. And then this place will be absolutely percolating. And I love that college football is starting so strong this season. You know, once in a while we get a couple good games, but there's so many great matchups. And then this one, you know, with just two absolute mega blue bloods and the number one ranked team in the country and the defending champ, this is how you start a season. Like, the NFL is so smart in how they schedule their season and how they just light that firecracker right off the bat. And NASCAR does it with Daytona 500, right? This is what college football should be. They should have this ignition of games to just kind of light that fuse right off the bat. And they got it this year, you know, LSU and Clemson as well. But there's nothing bigger this weekend, nothing maybe bigger this whole season than Ohio State and Texas.
Well, I think when it comes to big time college football stories that are, you know, have the potential to dominate a lot of all of the shows across the various networks, Arch Manning's a big one. I mean, for NFL fans as well as college football fans, have you, what's your feel on the Arch Manning, either the potential hysteria or the hysteria already?
Oh, the hysteria is there for sure. I mean, the dude has not been quarterback number one, essentially, and yet they're already talking about him being the number one overall draft pick in the NFL. Should he come out after one season as a starter? I'm very much in the pump your brakes. I think this kid is going to be great. Obviously, he has wonderful DNA. He's got legs to back up his arm as well, so he is a bit of a dual threat. That's really going to help Texas, particularly on the road in Columbus. But I would just – and it's impossible to lower the expectations because of what his name is, because of the fact that he was the number one ranked player in the 23 recruiting class, the highest ranked Texas recruit since the great Vince Young was there. So it's impossible to you know, pat down those expectations. But if I was Dad Cooper, who's going to be so stressed out Saturday, I would just ask the Texas base and really the college football base, just, can you give my son a couple weekends? Can you give him a couple real games as quarterback number one? You know, we know he had two starts last year and did pretty well, but it was It was Louisiana Monroe and not a great Mississippi State team. This is Ohio State. This is the blue blood. So I think the kid is going to be fantastic. I'm not convinced you're going to see it in week one. But again, he does have that last name and he does have that DNA. So maybe we should expect something absolutely remarkable on Saturday.
Rob Stone, Fox Big Noon Saturday, joining us here on Sports Radio 610. So along those lines, Rob, what exactly is Arch Manning facing here with Ohio State? We know they're the defending champ. What is Ohio State bringing back here, and what's that environment going to be like for Arch Manning on Saturday?
The environment's going to be massive. It's going to be intense. A lot of the national championship players from last season's team, Howard and Sawyer and company, are going to be back there. So the place is going to be frothy. We know that, right? But as far as what Ohio State brings back, let's be honest, not much. They bring back their brand, right? That's, I think, why they're number three, because guess what? They bring back three on offense, and they bring back three starters on defense. This is a rebuild, and I think people really need to pump the brakes on Ohio State right now. Will they surprise us on Saturday? I think to some extent, but they have new coordinators on both sides of the ball. They have the pressure of being the defending national champ. They're breaking in a new quarterback. They've got maybe the best player in college football in Jeremiah Smith, but Jeremiah Smith is never going to see one-on-one coverage all season long, and if somebody does go one-on-one with him, they're going to absolutely pay for it, assuming that Saiyan can get it to him. So if I'm an Ohio State fan, enjoy it, and keep remembering what you did last season, because I think it's a bridge too far to expect them to repeat as national champions this season with all the reloading that they have to do. But the beauty of an Ohio State, of a Texas, of a Michigan, of these big brands, these blue bloods, is it's stormtroopers, dude, right? Like one man goes down, another dude pops up. Another four star is up. Like, what happened to that four star? Oh, there's this five star freshman coming in. So, maybe it's a chance that these guys need to get that opportunity and get those snaps. But my guess, and I know this sounds easy to say, but I think both of these teams are going to make the college football playoffs. I think they're going to both be immensely better come November and December.
Rob, as far as your actual broadcast goes, one of the big news items is that Dave Portnoy is going to be on Fox this year. And
I haven't heard. What's going on with that?
Now, okay, clear some things up for me, because I generally read headlines and nothing more. Is he or is he not allowed in the facility at Ohio State?
No clue. I'm not trying to walk away from it. I honestly have no clue. I've never even met Dave face to face. We've had two Zoom calls as kind of like a group. So I will see him probably tonight or tomorrow for the first time ever and actually shake hands with him. I don't know who's lying, who's telling the truth. It seems silly, but also it's conversation. People are talking about it, and they're talking about our show, which is a good thing. In the end, I think Dave is going to be a great addition to our conversation as we try to grow and compete against our obvious competitor. And I'm looking forward to the energy and maybe the creativity and obviously the attention that he's going to bring to us. But in all honesty, I'm not trying to navigate around it. I have no idea. Nobody from Ohio State, Dave, my leadership, nobody said, hey, Rob, here's the lowdown. And you know what? I'm not even going to ask him for it.
Yeah.
Well, that's always interesting to me. When you're on a panel or something like that, especially in the environment in which you guys operate, where there's a lot of things going on, there's a lot of noise. Those first couple of weeks, are you just kind of trying to sit back and try to figure out how all the personalities are going to work together? You can't necessarily go into a show with a real plan or feel for how it's going to go, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to be a little more nimble than we have in the past. I have great comfort and trust and love, frankly, for Brady and Matt and Mark and Coach Meyer as well and the Bear. And now we're bringing in a new face, which is, a wild card. And that's how Dave operates. Dave is going to be Dave. Nobody at Fox, nobody on our set is going to say, hey, Dave, maybe turn it up a little bit or turn it down a little bit on this topic. He is going to do what he wants to do. And, I'm going to be like the lockdown point guard defender I was in high school, Sean.
Yes.
I'm going to be on the balls of my feet. My knees are going to be bent. My arms are going to be out. And I'm ready to just take on anything that comes my way. So I'm not expecting a whole lot of things scripted from Mr. Portnoy. And that'll be just fine for me.
floor-slapping point guard that was Rob Stone at Simsbury High School.
A lot of floor birds in practice,
Rob, there's a phrase we like to use around these parts is paint me a picture. Paint me a picture of a young Sean Pendergast in high school.
Oh, man.
A day in the life of Sean Pendergast, because I have, like, I've kind of got a Ferris Bueller kind of feel about how he operated in high school.
That's not bad. A Ferris Bueller for sure. Definitely not the girlfriend that Ferris Bueller had.
No.
We can scratch that off. The car that Ferris borrowed, not quite the same as the Duster that made it around town of the mean streets of Simsbury, Connecticut.
Yeah.
Sean is exactly what you're seeing right now. Like, you know, listen, Sean and I, good Lord, dude, how far back should we go? We were playing your dad and my dad were basketball coaches, right? We kind of rigged the whole YMCA basketball thing so we could be on the same team.
I think we were playing Brian Kesselman had a pinball machine in his basement at his birthday party in sixth grade. Yes. I think that's the first time you and I met. We're playing pinball till like 2 o'clock in the morning.
And the next thing you know, the two of us are talking about pro wrestling. And from there, we've been friends ever since.
That's it.
When Sean told me that he was going to be a sports radio host in Houston, Texas, after his career of selling phone systems, I was like, yeah, that makes perfect sense because you are so intelligent and smart and fast and witty and quick and creative and entertaining and love sports. And you're one of the guys that, like, I see him, Seth, from a distance, and I just want to kind of like break my stride and start kind of jogging and then maybe a little run and then just jump into those big meaty paws. He's friggin' awesome. He's the best, and this profession was made for him, and he was made for us.
Oh, you're the man, Stoner. You're the man. We will not talk about the picture from Florida spring break, though. We're going to leave
that. Yeah, there was a picture.
Can we talk about Bob? Did Sean tell you about Bob?
The homeless guy that we befriended, Seth. I told you about Bob.
When you were on vacation there?
In Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
What could go
so
wrong?
So you guys didn't... No, this sounds like a perfect Sean Pendergast story, because it's not like you just found a guy outside a convenience store to buy you beer. He was like your concierge for the whole week,
he
right?
He befriended us, yeah.
Well, the first part is correct. That's how the friendship began.
Beer.
You know, and listen, it's like a little Bob Seger, you know, like I used her, she used me, neither one cared, right? So that's just kind of how it went those last couple days in Fort Lauderdale. When he needed something from us that was, you know, on the clean side, everything was fine. We take care of Bob. And Bob certainly supplied us with our fair share of California coolers, Seagram's, some Bartles and James, maybe a couple random beers flew in there. Yeah, you know how it was back then.
Hell yeah. Oh, man. Good times. Rob Stone joining us here. Hey, Stoner, back to the game for a second. I think ESPN is going to be on site doing their game day there as well. I know that's happened. I know that's happened a few times. I'm just curious. I mean, you know those guys. Like, you go back with those guys. You used to be at ESPN. So what's the dynamic like when both of your shows are on the same campus like that?
Yeah, I call it hand-to-hand combat, because everybody is fighting for kind of the same resources. So we're both fighting for the crowd. We're both fighting for guests. We're both fighting for real estate. We're both fighting for eyeballs. It's kind of down and dirty. For both parties, I would like to think, I can't speak for game day, but for us, certainly it's more of a charge. But it's serious. Like, we hardly see them and vice versa. About the only time I'll see them is maybe at the end of our shows. And our show goes a little bit longer because we're leading into the noon game. So we'll see them on the sideline, and usually they pick their sideline and we have our sideline. It's like some kind of weird turf war that nobody asked for. But you know me, I'm a nice guy,
right?
So I'll walk over there and I'll say hi to Reese and, you know, kind of catch up and chat and see how the family is doing. And then I'll move my way. And the Coach Corso story is so great this week, and what he means to college football. And I had the opportunity to work with him as a production assistant. I remember the first, I can't believe we're talking about game day, because it's all about big noon kickoff on Fox for Saturday, guys. But real quick, I was a production assistant on game day, and this is the first time they went on the road. And you know the first time they went on the road, don't you?
Florida State, Notre Dame, 1993.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yes, sir. So I was in the back of a TV truck. But prior to us going, one of the ideas I pitched was Coach Corso doing a weather forecast. So we went down to the old WVIT, NBC 30 there in Hartford, West Hartford line, right by the West Farms Mall. And I got him on a green screen and we did this kind of whole weather thing of what the weather was going to be like in South Bend that week. And it went off the rails and it was great television. And I don't think Coach Corso remembers me at all, but I certainly remember him and his impact for college football. So we are going to tip our cap to him on Saturday for sure. He deserves it. And, you know, very, very proud of what he's been able to accomplish.
Yeah, and then Portnoy's going to kill somebody with a trident. Yeah.
At the same time, we're – yeah, exactly. Yeah. to my point, I have no idea what's going to come Saturday, and I'm really excited about that. And I think the audience should be too, right? Yeah. Nobody wants the same old boring, drab conversation of this and that. They want some wild cards. They want to be entertained. That's something – that Coach Corso, you know, one of his main mottos through his course in this industry, that's something that we certainly do at Fox.
Yeah,
well, that's ingrained in our DNA.
You know, I'm always intrigued by when guys like Urban Meyer enter broadcasting. It's just such a different world, and they end up having to do things that they normally would never say as a coach or anything. What's it been like watching Urban Meyer make that transition? And because you obviously still see the Urban Meyer, the coach side of things, but has it been like a gradual opening up process for him?
For sure. It's been really amazing. He and I become really close friends. You know, we have our podcast, The Triple Option, with Mark Ingram every week as well. So, like, all of a sudden, Coach is, you know, a guy who really wasn't, quote-unquote, media savvy or media friendly, because just what you always saw from him on television was just this ultra-focused, intense leader who wanted nothing but wins and the best for his student-athletes and wanted that national title wherever he was. So every year, yeah, I definitely see that competitiveness come down a notch, but you also know it's still there. And if you needed to call upon it at any moment, you know it's there. It's lurking somewhere in his system. If Ryan Day had the flu one week and Ohio State's like, Coach, we need you to walk in, he's like, got it. Like, he'll just shove us to the side. He might like put me in charge of the kickers and like lay out some pennies or something and cones, but he could walk right back into that environment. But he is so smart and so savvy and so intelligent, and he's one of the best speakers you could ever be around. If you ever get an opportunity to hear him speak out in the public, his stories and his life lessons are just so fantastic. But he is a dialed in cat. I try to get him to smile maybe a little bit more, and it's coming out as more and more grandbabies are produced. So he's becoming more and more of a normal human being rather than this intense, amazing college football robot head coach that he had been for so many years.
I'm sure adding Dave Portnoy will add plenty of smiles, I'm sure, for the Ohio State guy.
That's going to be great Michigan-Ohio State banter.
It will be, no doubt. And I'm glad you mentioned the podcast, Stoner, The Triple Option. That is a great college football podcast that you should subscribe to and download, because it's Rob Stone, it's Urban Meyer, and as you mentioned, Texans legend Mark Ingram. He was a Texan for like five games. And then was the smartest guy in the world. He asked for a trade off the 2021 Houston Texans.
Hey, I'm excited about your Texans this year now. I got my fantasy football draft coming up Monday, one of them, and I think there's going to be a lot of Texans that are going to get picked.
Stay away from Joe Mixon.
I know that one. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, Nico Collins. Hey, Stoner, you want Woody Marks? You get into about the 15th or 16th round, Woody Marks, rookie running back out of USC, I think is going to factor much more heavily into this team than we all forecasted the day that they drafted him. So I'm saying like a late round pick, get yourself some Woody Marks.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. Love a Woody Marks. Yeah.
Okay. We got a Woody. We have a Nick Chubb also on the team, Rob. Just saying.
Just be careful, Brady. Just make sure HR isn't listening.
Yeah, they're
good. No, don't worry. You sound a little bit like an ad that we have running right now. That don't worry, don't worry about it.
Yeah, we're good. Yeah, we can't. No, the boundaries have been blurred for sure. Rob Stone, you can catch him big noon Saturday, the Triple Option podcast. Stoner, 10 a.m. our local time here in Houston, right? For the start time.
10 a.m. I don't know. Central. We're on 3 hours this week. Math is hard, Sean. Math is hard.
Yeah, you know what?
You just tell me.
Just put it on Fox at 9 a.m. and whatever's on, watch that. And if it's big noon Saturday, watch it. If it's not, wait till big noon Saturday comes on. That's what I would tell people.
There we go. Good man. Hey, thanks, brother.
Stoner, you're the man. Love you. You're the best. Appreciate you. Have a great broadcast on Saturday. We'll do it again soon, my man.
You got it. All right. Hey, and I love listening Deshaun and Seth every day.
Home field advantage.
Hey, Nick Caserio does that, and it's bogus. Because Caserio is a big WWE guy. Him and Sean have bonded. And whenever he kind of name drops us in an interview, he'll say, "Oh yeah, you know, I'm on Pendergast and Payne."
He did it on McAfee. He's like, "Yeah, you know, Pendergast and Payne in Houston." I was like, "Yes." It.
So everybody tune into High Noon Kickoff starting at 9 a.m. Central this Saturday. Yeah.
The Double Dribble podcast, too. Yeah,
the Double Dribble. That's great. Stoner, we'll talk soon, man. Have a good show on Saturday,
all right, brother.
Buddy. All right.
Have a great weekend. Be good, right, buddy.
You too. See ya. That's Rob Stone joining us here on the show.
It is 9 a.m. Central this
week. It is 9 a.m.?
According to the AI Google,
we'll go with it. We'll go with it. All right, that was the great Rob Stone joining us here. That's going to be fun, man. Texas, Ohio State, boy, I don't know, man. Three starters returning on each side of the ball. I'm feeling a big wager on the Longhorns, possibly. We'll see. On the road.
I feel like you've got an axe to grind with Arch Manning, just because, as Rob himself pointed out, people are almost anointing him without him having actually played a whole lot of football.
Okay, yet. I'm glad you brought that up. Let's carry that into the next segment. Do I have an axe to grind with Arch Manning? We will discuss that coming up next. Okay, there's some funny texts coming in. The mean streets of Simsbury, LOL. Hey, you've never been there, man. Texter, I'm assuming. You don't know. You don't know. So much glazing going on with Sean and his buddy Stoner. Calm down, fellas. Rob was coming on and saying nice things about me, man. What? I didn't script that or anything.
And then you didn't. You hardly said anything nice about him. Yeah, Grim, if that helps at all.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It was total one-way glazing. Yeah.
What
are you doing? Yeah. A lot of good stuff. When is the first Circle of Swarm? Oh, that's a good question. That'll be next Friday, right? Next Friday, 7:20.
Is that when we do it? We do it on Fridays.
Fridays
okay.
At 7:20. It will be our first Circle of Swarm. I don't know what we're going to base it on. I guess the preseason.
We're doing a Circle of Swarm before the regular season begins.
Well, we started it in week three last year, so we've got no precedent. You know,
I feel like it for the Texans, it tended to be more of a week by week. It was for the Astros, it's more of a, okay, this is a Circle of Trust. Who do we trust? Circle of Swarm was more of a post-game award. For the guys who were very swarm worthy that week,
with a glance at the week ahead, though, too.
Right. But it wasn't as much of a prediction.
Yeah.
The circle of trust with the Astros, which we've been very negligent with this year.
Yeah.
It turns out we're very much front runners when it comes to a circle of trust.
Yeah.
So we got to revamp the circle of trust.
We do.
We could do a circle of swarm based on the preseason.
I think the people want one. I think they want a circle of swarm. It's a fun segment. It generates conversation. We'll do both next week. How's that sound? Now, tomorrow we are going to do our annual NFL head coach death pool draft.
Yeah.
As you and I each try to predict which will be the first head coach fired during the season.
Yeah.
I
gotta guess McDaniel's at the top of the leaderboard.
He's
right
at the top of the odds board. Yeah, I'll send you the odds so you've got something to work off of.
Anytime an entire fan base is worked up into a fervor over whether or not your head coach is tough enough, that's a bad sign, man.
Dude, yeah,
that's a bad sign. Yep. You got to do something to. He's got to go out and. He might need to beat up one of his players.
Yeah.
Now I don't know which one that would be. It'd have to be a specialist. I don't know which football player Mike McDaniel has a chance in hell of beating up, but he might have to take it too far and get a little too physical with one of his players.
God, that would be fun. That would be so fun. You asked me a question going into break because we just finished up with Rob Stone, who's the host of Fox's Big Noon Saturday. They're in Columbus to cover the Longhorns and the Ohio State Buckeyes. The game will be on Fox. Mm-hmm. And Arch Manning is the A topic for this game for sure. He's the A topic in college football this year, in my opinion. And you asked, do I have an axe to grind with Arch Manning? I don't have an axe to grind with Arch Manning specifically. And Seth, I'll be honest with you, the more interviews I watch with him, the more I like him. I think he's a really likable kid. What I am upset with is the two things. One, the complete assumption that he's going to go into the NFL draft next year and he's going to be the number, not just that he'd be the number one overall pick, but that he would go into the draft at all. Like, the history in the Manning family is guys stay all 4 years, and I know that that was a different time. I would argue that this is a different time that is even more conducive to Arch Manning staying in college with the advent of NIL and getting paid. Yeah. Not that he needs the money.
Right. And a lot of my, I've seen a couple mock drafts for next year that don't have Arch Manning in it. You know, it's not like people aren't aware of it. And Arch Manning himself came out and corrected his grandpa when Archie said that he wasn't going to enter the draft. Arch said, well, hold on a second. Yeah. Archie said, okay, out of, you know, that was out of line. But yeah, there are a lot of reasons to believe that he might not enter the draft. But even if he does enter the draft, I mean, it's just, it has nothing to do with him or how he's conducted himself. It's just that he's an unproven commodity still.
That's the other
and,
thing.
And the fact that people are almost acting like it's a given that he's somebody worth tanking for or what have you. When, like, how many times do we have to go through
it's this? Lazy. It's just lazy.
Tanking for Tua. You know, like, should the Dolphins tank for Tua? Turns out they didn't have to.
Yeah.
Because he ended up selected fifth that year or whatever it was. You just don't know.
I think tanking talk in the NFL, period, is lazy. I think tanking talk for Arch Manning is silly because he's, to your point, he's thrown 93 passes at the collegiate level. Like, if his name was Arch, whatever, you know, Arch Jones or something like that, like, we wouldn't be having these conversations.
Various other guys who have been the top quarterback recruit, like let's say Davis Mills, perhaps.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, out of high school, right?
Coming out of high school,
number one guy. Tell you, Texans had three of them on the roster at one time.
Who were the three? They had three former top rated quarterback prospects.
Top rated high school quarterback prospects: Davis Mills.
Yeah.
Kyle Allen.
That's right.
Jeff Driscoll.
And Jeff Driscoll. That's right. Yep. All three of them. To the point where I was starting to come up with my theories in my mind that Nick was just going after guys that maybe had never reached their full potential, but at one point,
Nick was the one GM hoping that the NFL would start relegation and they would relegate your team into college.
Yeah.
And then we would dominate with Kyle Allen and Jeff Driscoll, Davis Mills. Exactly.
Now, you know, one big difference is that Davis Mills was not necessarily playing for a program that's the caliber of the current Texas Longhorns.
No.
I think that the amount, there's unlikely to be another worldwide shutdown of college sports in general and all of that.
Yep. Yeah. I was intrigued by some of Rob's answers to the questions that we asked him, like the Portnoy thing. Is really interesting to me. I think Stoner's being 100% honest. When you asked about because I'm in the same spot you are, Seth. I see all these Dave Portnoy stories about, and Portnoy with Fox, he's going to be part of Big Noon Saturday. But Michigan guy, very outspoken, supposedly banned from being able to go on the field in Columbus. I see all these stories. I mean, we asked point blank the host of the show that Portnoy is going to be on, what's the deal? And Rob said, not only does he not know, he will be meeting Dave Portnoy in person for the first time in the next 24 hours.
Right. And Portnoy, I saw a couple weeks ago, said he doesn't really know what their plans are for him. So it could be mayhem. It could be brilliance. Who knows? I felt better that Rob Stone doesn't know whether Portnoy is actually allowed in the building, because I've read conflicting articles about exactly what he is and is not allowed to do at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Because he's been pretty critical of Ohio State. Some would say he's gone too far if you're like an Ohio State booster or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have no idea what to expect. It should be interesting.
It should be. I'm intrigued now. You know,
it's
Fox
working.
Folks will be on. It's working. I'm intrigued.
They're picking up the young male viewer that is Sean
Pendergast.
That is
me. Yup. The demographic of 18 to 25 and 56-year-olds. Just a random island right there. Yeah. And then the whole thing about the ESPN turf war, the dynamic of the two entities, game day with ESPN.
Yeah, they're both there for college game.
And I was expecting an answer of like, no, you know, we all know each other. It's pretty friendly. That was not the answer. The answer was they kind of stare each other down from the opposite sidelines.
It sounds like they're scrambling for a lot. I'm guessing a lot of the players that they'd like to interview beforehand, a lot of the actual geography, like where are the best places to set up your stage and everything.
Yeah.
I wonder if both networks sent out people extra early, like the people that do all the location scouting type stuff and everything. Yeah, like basically planting their flag or putting an actual tent up. I would, if I were an enterprising young person working for $17,000 a year for some entry level job, but trying to make a name for myself, I would bring a tent and actually camp on, like, nope, this is where our stage is going to be.
Seth Payne, game day squatter is what you would be. This is our land. This is my land. I've been here for 48 hours. Those are the rules of college football. preview shows. If you've been squatting on, in a tent for 48 hours, this is our land. We didn't get a chance to ask him this. I do wonder, Fox is the Big Ten, basically, outlet. They're associated with the Big Ten. ESPN's more associated with the SEC. I wonder if that factors in, but that they're in Columbus, if Fox is getting dibs on best location, we get Ryan Day first, you know, all that stuff. That stuff's interesting. I don't know how interested the audience is in that, but I'm intrigued by that kind of stuff. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Final segment coming up. We'll find out what the guys on In the Loop have going on. I promised we would play it again earlier. D'Amico Ryans, about as emotional as you'll see him in talking about players and an aspect of the media. What parts do we agree with? What parts do I know I disagree with at least part of it. We will talk about that coming up next. Hey, real quick. This is from Sam Fortier, who is a sports writer for the Washington Post. Yeah. And there is an article that is in the Washington Post that I'm guessing Sam wrote. Breaking, NFL owner Jim Irsay secretly relapsed, got ketamine from a, quote, luxury doctor before his death.
Huh.
And the three bullet points in the tweet with the link to the article are: Irsay and Colts executives misled the public. Irsay overdosed three times between 2020 and his death in May.
Yeah.
Serious concerns raised about his doctor's care. Those are the three bullet points. So
I don't think that's a big surprise. I mean, it seemed like in those last few years that, I mean, it got to the point where I used to love to make fun of Irsay, and then I kind of backed off because it seemed like, you knew he had this history of, you know, chemical dependency and what have you. And I didn't, it just didn't seem like he was necessarily in his right mind. I guess strictly on a football side of things, it's been interesting to watch people lambaste the Colts for the way they're handling Anthony Richardson. And I almost feel like it's disingenuous in a way, because at the same time, I think they're not discussing the fact that that it seemed like, and there were reports at the time that it was Jim Irsay that was forcing Anthony Richardson on the Colts and for them to play him immediately, even though Chris Ballard didn't. I don't think Chris Ballard thought he was ready to play immediately. He was an extreme project.
Yeah.
Except that, so people are, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
They're calling the Colts idiots for benching Anthony Richardson because he needs time and reps. Well, at the same time, they're not acknowledging, you know, what was actually reported, which was that this didn't, I don't think Ballard himself really wanted, Chris Ballard, the GM, really wanted Anthony Richardson to play right away. But they're kind of treating the Irsay situation with kid gloves. Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like an ugly situation at the end, or at least in the last couple of years with the Colts.
Yeah, and I'm not saying what I'm about to say to be insensitive. I'm not. And I acknowledge the sadness of this and Jim Irsay's, you know, that in Indianapolis, he's the, you know, he and his family are the reason they have a football team. And I should point out, Jim Irsay, very charitable, did a lot of great things in Indianapolis and around the country. My thought, just purely from a football standpoint, is holy crap, this was not an owner who sat at his house doing drugs and just let people run things. Like, Jim Irsay was involved. He had three overdoses, according to this story, between 2020 and his death in May. In that interval, you know, and I'm assuming the three overdoses weren't the only times he was taking things.
Yeah.
He was very involved in this football team. That would be the thing if I were a Colts fan, like, holy crap, the guy that's really running things, you know, was who knows what state of mind he was in while he's doing this.
No,
stuff.
And I think that was you have to be careful when you're talking about stuff like this, because it's an actual serious real world problem he was having. But at the same time, there were football decisions that were being made that seemed increasingly either erratic or desperate, or at least pushed on the actual football people.
Yes.
And remember, he had that mysterious absence a year or so ago before he died.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff going on, and listen, everybody listening, you know how I feel about Indianans in general. Vile, vile people. Everybody except Vanessa Richardson. Mm-hmm. Just putrid people. But I'm increasingly convinced that her family is being held in Indiana against their
okay.
will. And Vanessa can't say anything about it.
Right.
Because of fear of harm that could be done to them.
Yes.
But I think that like Chris Ballard has done a lot of good things as a GM. I think I'm really impressed with him as a GM. I think they've been hamstrung by their owner for the last few years. Mm-hmm. And like Irsay's family is in charge now. His one daughter that was kind of visible on the sidelines seems, I believe, is the, you know, the one who's actually in
there's
charge.
One who's sort of the leader of the daughters. Yes,
so there might be more of an actual stability there with the Colts now, to where we might have to really start taking them seriously again and as an opponent.
Yeah, I'm gonna read this article for sure. It's WashingtonPost.com. Is that one that I need? Are they behind a paywall? Do I need to do like a
You're gonna have to do a $1 membership.
Okay.
I between you, Amy's email, and then any one of you want to concoct on Yahoo or something,
gotcha.
You'll be fine.
Okay, I'll be fine.
Just remember to set the alert to cancel the subscription.
Right. Or I just wait for Florio to turn this into his latest co-celebra and give me a rundown of the article on Pro Football
Talk. Yeah,
but
the problem with that is that there's always, it's the telephone game.
Yeah.
You read something from an aggregator and then you realize like, oh, wow, he just, well, like Florio with his own reporting about the NFLPA grievance they had filed.
Yep.
Where I'm getting it from Pablo Torre and Florio himself, and I'm like, okay, let me go read this document. I read the document, and I'm like, oh, these guys are totally just trying to snowball everybody.
Yes.
Florio's irate that people were not, just to go off on a tangent, Florio, just to encapsulate the last 6 weeks of Florio leading into training camp, where he was trying to come up with something clickworthy. This is basically what happened. He said, ha! I've got evidence that the NFL colluded against the players. Oh, what's the evidence? A ruling that said that there wasn't collusion against the player. Why are people not more angry about this?
Why are they not clicking on this? Yeah. Hey, let's get to D'Amico Ryans before the guys on In the Loop come in here. We'll find out what they've got going on the show. This was D'Amico Ryans unfiltered for about 2 minutes yesterday, talking about how injuries get reported and, in some cases, misreported.
Yeah, everything we do for when it comes to injuries, and I don't talk about the injuries much because I'm thinking about the player. Like, it's different for me. I played the game, so I can see all the news and media that circulates on everybody speculating. Well, it's not us speculating. It's everybody who's writing the stories are speculating. So it's more so of, let's not speculate if you don't know the true information. And why is everybody so quick to find some story on a player when he's dealing with whatever he's dealing with? That's his personal information. I don't think anybody would speculate on the people who are writing the story wouldn't speculate on your medical situation. Because would that be fair? No, it wouldn't be. So it's all out of respect to the players and the men who put the work in the locker room to grind and what they put their bodies through to be on the fields. Like, that's always the forefront of my thoughts. Everybody really doesn't care about our players in that manner. Everybody kind of just wants to write a story. And now in the day and age where we are with everybody wants to be first with a story, there's no repercussions for people writing inaccurate stories about players. You can just put something out and you don't really know the information. It's not true, but nothing happens. You just, take it down. So where is the old school reporting where people used to fact find, take time, really dig and find like the true accurate information on players? That doesn't happen anymore, right? Everybody wants to get it, right? Get it. It's the microwave society. Everybody wants it quick. Everybody wants it now. And that leads to inaccurate information. Well, I would just say it's really – that's Joe's business. That's whoever's business. And don't talk about it. Let him be at peace. Let him do what he has to do to recover and get back right to play the game that he sacrificed his body, time for all these guys do that. So the speculation, it isn't from our end. It's from everybody else who wants to be first. And that's, I get it. It's the clickbait. I want to be first. I reported it first, so I'm the best. Well, how is that helping our players? It's not. And it's inaccurate. And what happens to you when you put out an inaccurate story? Nothing. So who's the benefit from this? Our players aren't benefiting from it. Joe isn't benefiting from it. So what are we talking about here, right? So for me, it's always about protecting our players because I truly care about our players.
I think the thing about a lot of, because he said a lot there, you know, and there's a lot to attack. I think one big thing, though, is that I think that at least part of what D'Amico's talking about there isn't Joe Mixon specifically and anything that anybody might have put out. Because I haven't seen any things that might be false or inaccurate actual reports yet about Joe Mixon. I've seen people say things that are, like, logically true, which they say, well, it could be something that keeps him out all year. And then depending on who's saying that, you know, when it's something like Adam Schefter saying that, you naturally kind of think like, okay, well, does he know something? You know, so like that's where it does it. It feels a little bit irresponsible unless he's reporting something factual that, like, you know, this doctor says that Joe Mixon specifically doesn't. But I think that D'Amico is also addressing the report that C.J. Gardner-Johnson had a torn ACL.
1,000%.
Because that was factually incorrect.
Yes.
And it was done in haste, in a rush. And then, like, that's it. There's nothing.
And then the article got taken down, like you said.
There's no
repercussions. Right.
So there's an environment where there's this desperation to report things. But also, when it comes to the team itself disclosing things, yes, you're protecting the players. But I also, like, I do think a lot of teams are also, you know, using it as a competitive advantage, just whether it works or not. They keep things very close to the vest, and they're not going to divulge anything that they don't have to divulge. And so both things can be true. One, out of respect to the player, you don't want to put out anything that the player doesn't want to know. But even if the player says, no, you guys can go ahead and give my whole medical history, tell them everything.
They won't.
Tell them about the time I went to a psychologist, whatever.
Right.
They're not gonna, like, they're going to keep it close to the vest because it, in some way, even though it's minuscule, it might be a competitive advantage.
It benefits the team, and it's not just about the individual always. Yeah, that's a good point. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula, they
Howdy.
Are here. Do you guys want your medical information out there?
I don't care.
I think there's instances where
I put it out yesterday.
Yeah, let's
I put it out myself.
Bring
yesterday.
It on. Yeah. Well, you gave me a medical report
this
second
morning.
I walked in. You said my back's hurting, my knees are hurting.
Yeah.
You say all this to say that you ain't running a mile.
I'll walk with you and let you win.
You'll let me just burst ahead at the very end, so you and I have a nice casual walk where we're
I'm just
whistling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun.
Snapping our fingers.
Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing.
Seth, can I ask you, though, because, I mean, when it comes to the idea of competitive advantage for the, you know, tight-lipped approach or close-to-the-vest approach that the Texans have, do you think that actually exists in the NFL? Because one of the things that Nick Caserio himself will also say on the other side when we ask him, well, how do you feel about this player who may or may not play? Is we prepare for all of the circumstances, all the inevitabilities that could happen. How much of a competitive advantage do you actually see there?
Well, it doesn't matter. Can you quantify it or not? It's if a team, let's take it to an extreme. If a team definitively knows that, okay, this guy's not going to play no matter what, then that gives them an advantage in game planning for you and exactly what they practice that week or whatever. Versus if a team definitively knows that, this guy actually didn't have any medical issue at all and he's 100% healthy, I think that gives that team, your opponent, can plan for it. So when taken to extremes, you could see it could be a huge difference. I think that it's like the mistake people make in this is that they do that thing in sports where they love to think that winning or losing all hinges on one single factor, when then that's never the case in sports or life. It's always a multitude of factors. It's thousands of things. And you're trying to get as many small advantages as possible over another team that's also trying to get as many small advantages over you. So I like it in terms of just having a policy of, look, we don't know. You never know exactly when something is actually going to pay off or when it isn't. But we know that we don't lose anything by keeping it close to the vest. And if it works, if it helps us win one play over the course of an entire season that we would have lost otherwise, then it's worth it. And I think that it's the accumulation of small advantages that gives you a bigger advantage.
There you go. I'm sorry, I got distracted. I'm looking at the Bills debuting their cold front uniforms on October the 5th versus the Patriots.
Do they have fur on them?
They look like you guys have seen Rudolph the Red. I think it's whatever Christmas story has the heat miser, the cold miser.
Yeah,
I think that's Santa Claus is coming to town, and you have the cold miser, and he's up there in the North, the Great White North, and everything is light blue and white, and it's all icicles and everything. That's what this is. Look at this. Yeah, see that? Look at Josh Allen.
Oh,
he
wow.
He looks like Cold Miser.
Mm-hmm.
The whole uniform is white, except for the numbers and the logo on the helmet is light blue.
Man, I hope it snows.
Well, it's October the 5th. Oh. It might in Buffalo.
And we just can't see anything. Can't That's see what you're anybody. Looking forward to? Yeah.
Seth, do they get snow in Buffalo on October the 5th ever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not as often, though. Usually it's yeah. like, it's if you get snow on Halloween, it's a big deal. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible, but right. not as often.
Yeah, they're not.
You're more likely to get snow every now and then in June.
Yeah.
Which is a blast.
Yeah, that was Denver, man. Living in Denver, it could snow anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime.
Mm-hmm.
What's the question of the day, fellas?
Well, you saw Joe Espada got sick yesterday. Missed Yordan's big hit.
Yeah.
Big win.
And Cam.
Omar
Stay
Lopez.
Away.
Omar sure. Lopez,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Put a Lopez in charge, good things happen.
That's right.
You should have seen that one from a mile
so
away.
They say,
so the question of the day is, what's something getting sick ruined for you?
Oh, like you got sick like eating or drinking
yeah.
something? Or you got, oh, okay.
So, or just got sick.
Okay. You know,
mine was my middle son's engagement party.
Oh,
we yeah. had Chipotle for lunch, my wife and I.
Okay.
Went to the engagement party. We were there about 15 minutes max.
Get out.
And I said, we got to go. She goes, what? We just got. I said, no, we have to go now.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to go.
So has that ruined Chipotle for you?
I haven't gone to Chipotle again since.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I think almost, I would think, like, I feel like 70% of the adult population can say tequila in general.
Yes.
There's something about tequila that once you get sick off of tequila, it's a rough comeback on that one.
Mine was Southern Comfort. Is still to this day Southern Comfort because
yeah.
of my 21st birthday. You know, I don't know if kids still do this. I would hope they're more responsible. But on your 21st birthday, you had to take 21 shots.
I'm sure they do.
I don't know if I made it to 21. The last thing I remember,
mm-hmm.
it's a Notre Dame story. So brace yourself. It involves a famous person.
Okay.
Tony Rice. You remember Tony Rice?
I remember Tony
Quarterback?
Rice.
Quarterback. Yeah. He was the last. And I wasn't friends with him. He happened to be the bar that I was at,
mm-hmm.
McCormick's in downtown South Bend. The last thing I remember is Tony Rice.
Hey, you're 21?
In the year he finished fourth for the Heisman, handing me a shot of SoCo. And that next thing I know, I'm on my couch the next morning. I have no idea what happened. There's a garbage can next to the couch. So Southern Comfort. And then, I don't know, I think I might have caught COVID, but they... Something that getting sick ruined for me, the year Amy and I, we did our road trip and we went out to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
We drove progressively and we got to Vegas. Mm-hmm. I got to Vegas and I think I had COVID. I didn't leave the room for like 3 days.
Oh, goodness.
And it ruined Vegas for me.
Yeah.
It ruined I'll go back, but that trip it ruined for me.
Yeah.
So there you go. Those are mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Did you say what yours was, Seth?
No, I haven't been sick that much in my life. Knock on wood.
God bless you.
So I can't think of one.
Okay,
that's why he's going to win the mile.
Exactly.
He's impermeable.
Check your phones. I want to see.
I saw it, and I appreciate this disclosure.
All that white stuff in my knee—that's not good stuff.
Oh,
nor is the big jagged bone sticking up into my meniscus there or anything.
Yikes!
That knee is going to run a 6 minute mile. I swear it.
6 minutes.
Honestly, I thought that was a pregnant woman the first time
so
I saw it.
What is the white stuff again? That's metal? Or is it?
That's all inflammation.
Oh, inflammation.
Stuff,
yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Is this just fluid in your knee or something?
Yeah. Oh. I've got another. I'll send you the front view that's got all the pins and
excellent.
Screws in
some
my
some frontal.
Knees.
Yes. Seth, send me some full frontal. Yes.
I've had 12 knee surgeries. It's not a pretty sight in there.
Yeah. 12. Do you have to go in for tune-ups every now and then on that bad boy?
So my tune-up is running a 6 minute mile.
I know
that's
that.
The tune-up.
Yeah, yeah. That's the tune-up.
And an unrelenting denial of the things that are actually going on in my life and body, okay? Yeah.
Oh, man.
I like the visual of Seth just walking in the doctor's office. Yep, 10,000 mile.
Yeah, it's my 10,000 mile checkup.
I want to bet that Seth cannot run a 6 minute mile, but part of me is like, I bet you he does. And then keels over.
Bet she comes close. 7 minutes. Okay.
7 minutes is a realistic one.
I think can happen.
Yeah. Once I hit seven, then I'm gonna.
Six
then I'm gonna
is
set
moving,
my
man. Six is moving.
Six
Judy,
is moving.
I've got Judy Pendergast is helping me out with this.
She's not running for you.
No, she's not. Not running for me either. Yeah.
But she understands this. She understands the state of my knees, and we're gonna come up with a minimalist, like high intensity plan.
Okay.
Where I run as little as possible.
So are Sean and I.
Yeah.
Totally, mate. Walking. Walking, yeah. All right. Fellas, have a great show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seth, antibodies to you and your knee.
Oh, yeah. Antibodies and a healthy afternoon to you. Because you're just so sickly all the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much with my mayonnaise skin. Yeah. All right. We are done. We are out of time. You're listening. Oh, by the way, Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. Mm-hmm. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM, HD2 Houston at Odyssey Sports Station.